Well, welcome to the Moral and Ethical Leadership Podcast, hosted by the BYU Management Society Salt Lake Chapter. I'm Dave Austin.
And I'm Kurt Frankum.
And we have these weekly Voices of Light podcasts. We're so excited and honored to have with us today Noelle Pikus Pace. She graduated from Mountain View High School in Orem in 2001. Go Bruins. In high school, she competed in soccer, basketball, softball, track and field, bobsled, and skeleton. Ooh. She went on to run track and field at Utah Valley University, graduated in 2005, first-team All-American with a bachelor's degree in community health. During that time, she also broke the UVU high jump record, was a national discus champion, and became the first American woman to ever win the overall World Cup title in skeleton. She was favored to win the gold medal going into the 2006 Winter Olympics. At the U.S. Olympic trials in October of 2005, an unfortunate accident kept her from competing at the Olympic Games. A bobsled unexpectedly came out of the track and hit her. She sustained a compound fracture to her lower right leg and was unable to compete in the Olympics. 1 year later, she came back to win the World Championship by the largest margin in the history of the sport. She continued on with her education and received a master's degree in business administration in 2007. In 2008, Noelle decided to take a year off from competition, and she and her husband, Jansen, had a little girl. Noelle competed in the 2010 Winter Olympics on a sled that her husband built and was the top U.S. finisher, finishing fourth, just 0.1 seconds out of the medals. She retired after the Olympics to spend more time with her family, and Noelle and Jansen had a baby boy. In the summer of 2012, Noelle and Jansen decided that she would give it one last try to earn an Olympic medal, but only if their family could all travel together. Their dream became a reality February 14, 2014, as Noelle crossed the finish line, winning the silver medal at the Sochi, Russia Olympic Winter Games. She and Jansen currently manage their company, Inspire Hire, where they strive to help individuals live on purpose through elite online courses, master classes, programs, and consulting. Noelle, I have to say, our family is an Olympic family. We watched that. We watched that moment. When you jumped into the stands, it was a time, I'm sure, I know it was way more celebration for you, but I can't imagine because we were celebrating like crazy. Can you just kind of walk us through that moment and all the work and pain leading up to it?
Sure. Yeah. First of all, I just want to say thank you for having me on the show. It's an honor and I just appreciate it. But yeah, it's going for the 2014 games. That was a remarkable, really just, I mean, you see it as a day, you know, it happened on a day, right? It was February 14th, 2014 in Sochi, Russia, and the world saw it, you know, behind the camera lens, behind their TV screens, on their sofas is that one day. But man, it was a journey to get there. It was so many ups and downs and tears and leaps of joy. There was so much emotion going into that moment. So as I just remember standing on that line for that fourth and final run. So in skeleton, for those listeners that don't know what skeleton is, it's a head first, crazy adrenaline sport where we run and jump on a little cookie sheet, basically, and go 90 miles an hour down an icy track in and out. And we steer with our shoulders and our knees and pressure points on our sled. And we fly down this icy track, a mile long track, and we get down in about 50 seconds. And what happens in the Olympics is they take four runs. We go down the track four times and they combine our time. So it's really a race of consistency. And I remember standing up at the top of the track for that fourth and final run in the Olympic Games in 2014. And just, my heart was just full of gratitude. Honestly, I just remember standing up there thinking of everybody that had supported me and helped me to get to this point in my life. And just having a heart full of gratitude as I set my sled down on the ice and took off in a full sprint and maneuvered myself down that course in and out of the corners and flew past that finish line. I remember just stretching my head out just like a centimeter more, just to try and like be just a hundredth of a second faster. And I didn't know how I had done. I really had no idea. I just remember stretching my head out and trying to slow down, which is one of the scariest parts, to be honest with you, because we don't have brakes. So on this sled that's flying down the mountain, we're just dragging our feet and kind of trying to hit our sleds into the sides of the wall to slow ourselves down. And I remember as I crossed that finish line, looking up for a sign, like looking up for the clock or celebration or something, but I couldn't see anybody as I came up this ramp to finish. And I saw my coach get out into the track and he threw his arms in the air. Just a moment of like, ah, man, that moment, just seeing my coach standing there. I didn't know if it was gold, silver, or bronze. And it just, it, it really didn't matter. And as he threw his arms in the air, I tried to hurry and jump off my sled, and I couldn't get off fast enough. And I jumped up and down. I gave him a big hug, and the volunteers from Russia were saying, oh, come on, you need to go over to the right. You need to come over to the right. You need to go be on, like, you know, USA Today and Getty Images. And you need to be over here on these national affiliates, these media affiliates. And I said, no. I need to be up there with my family, over to the left, up into the stands. And they were like, where is she going? And I remember taking my helmet off and just screaming. And as I looked around for a way to get up into the arms of my husband and my two kids, and my parents, my siblings, they were all there supporting me. And I just remember not seeing a way. And I jumped off the edge of the track and jumped up into the stands to embrace them. And all I could shout was, we did it. It really, truly was never just about me on that Olympic journey. There were so many people. And so saying we did it, my husband had built my sled, and the sacrifice of him and my parents and my family, there, so many people went into making that medal happen. And it was a whole journey. It was incredible.
Wow. And I was going to ask, you know, oftentimes when we think about support from family and friends and even coaches, you know, we think, well, yeah, they're there, they're in the stands, they're cheering. But I would imagine that support was many, many years. Maybe help us understand what that support looked like for leading up to that point.
So I am a Bruin. Woohoo! Go Bruins! So I graduated in 2001 in high school, but I actually started bobsledding in 1999, was my first year down the track in a bobsled. So you think about that back in 1999 as a junior in high school, it was a 15-year journey to get to that podium. It wasn't something that happened overnight. And so, of course, along the way, from the 2006 games, I was ranked first in the world. And at our Olympic trials, I was hit by a bobsled and broke my leg and missed out on those games. So then 4 years later, I come back on a sled that my husband built, and I was ready and just ready to retire after those games because of the sacrifice really that goes into it. I was gone for months at a time and missed my daughter's first birthday, her first steps, her first words. I missed it all. And so I was ready to be done after 2010, and I finished fourth. And anybody that says that second place is the worst place to finish does not know the feeling of fourth in an Olympic Games, because fourth is the worst place to finish. Second is a victory. Second, and of course, you have people that feel like when they win second, they don't win second. They lost the gold. They didn't win the silver. But for myself, it was not that at all. We won the silver. It wasn't we lost the gold. So it was a huge journey. 15 years. I could write novels about what took place in those 15 years.
What an amazing journey. And Noelle, I was curious, just when you're such an inspiration to so many people. I'm wondering if you have people who have inspired you, if you have any experiences that you can share, you know, one or two experiences of times where you've been inspired in your life and people who have inspired you and what they've done to do that.
Yeah, for sure. Inspiration started at a young age with my parents. I always will, and they will always be my heroes in my eyes, just always instilling in us kids the importance of education and also the importance of fighting for what you want. To never, you know, if you're told, no, you can't do that, then I just remember time and time again, my parents would say, then you just need to find another way. Like if it's something you really want to achieve and somebody says no to you, or you hit a wall or a roadblock, they taught us at a young age to be resilient. And how important is that, especially now with a pandemic and all that's going on around us, whether it's a senior year that's lost, you know, and no graduation taking place, or jobs that are out the door and we're searching for new work, whatever it might be, how important is it to be resilient? It's extremely important. And so for me, I can think of a good handful of experiences as a child when I was told no, and my mom would say, then we just need to find another way. Or my dad would say, then we just need to figure it out. We'll figure out another way to make this work. If this is your dream, you fight for it and you make it happen. Another one of my heroes was in high school. I had a dilemma as a senior in high school. I was given the opportunity to try out for the Olympic Games in 2002. This was the 2002 Games in Salt Lake City. I'd only been competing for a short year, this was 2 years after I'd started skeletons. So 2 years after that. And I remember the Olympic trials were going to be held on a Sunday, and I knew I had no shot of making the Olympic team. I was nowhere even near that, but just to have that experience, you know, I probably would have finished dead last, to be honest with you. But I was given the opportunity to try out for the Olympic trials in 2002 in skeleton. And it was on a Sunday. And I just remember that being one of my first experiences with thinking, I don't know how I feel about competing on Sunday, you know, and this was a decision that, you know, with my family and growing up, we just had never, we'd always been taught to not participate in sports on Sundays and not to, and to try and keep the Sabbath day holy as best we could. And I remember having this really big dilemma, and my parents just said, this has to be something that you decide. This is, you know, your decision to make. And I didn't know what to do. And there's this amazing coach, and you may have heard of him, Eli Herring. He was a football player for BYU and just a stud of a guy.
We love him.
Yeah, he's so good. He's just such a great guy. And he was a math teacher at Mountain View High School. And he was also my discus and shot put coach. He was a track coach at Mountain View during that time. And I remember talking to him. I remember approaching him as this decision had to be made. And I knew a little bit of his background, but not all of it. And I just mentioned to him how this was a hard decision for me to make. Do I go and do I go to the Olympic trials on Sunday? Do I try out for this? Knowing full well, I have no shot. I mean, yes, there have been times, I'm not going to say that I'm a saint. And there have been times when I've had to compete on Sundays on World Cup teams and world championships or things like that. But I knew I didn't even have a shot. And so this wasn't necessarily a mandatory thing for me to do. And yes, we always have those decisions. Talk about ethics, right? And moral decisions, that it's just this battle. But at this time, I just knew I didn't have a shot. So would it be worth that sacrifice of for me, in my eyes, not keeping the Sabbath day holy? And I remember approaching him, expecting him to just give me a, this is what decision you should make. Like, I just wanted him to just tell me, yes, you should, or no, you shouldn't. And he gave me this great story about how he was recruited as a football player, like, to go compete in the NFL to make millions and millions of dollars. He was an incredible, you should correct me on this. You would know his position.
$6 million a year.
Was that?
He was offered $6 million a year, I think.
There you go. See, you know. It was just this big amount of money, right? And his life would have been taken care of financially. He could have been well off, and he turned it down. He turned down playing in the NFL because of this moral decision for him to not compete on Sundays. You know, you have Sunday night football. And when he told me that, I was expecting him to say, so no, you should not compete on Sundays. But he didn't. He didn't say that. He said, you know, that was a really tough decision for me that I made, but it was a decision between me and the Lord. And I made that decision and I feel good about my decision. And now it's your turn to work that out with you and the Lord. It's up to you to have that relationship with Heavenly Father and to figure out what's best for you. And so I thought that was really cool of him to encourage me to use my agency, to not be told, yes, I should or no, I shouldn't, but for him to teach me in such a teachable way, in such a, I mean, talk about being just a great teacher, to ask me questions. He just kept asking me questions and letting me figure out what decision I wanted to make. And ultimately, I ended up turning down that opportunity to compete because it just didn't feel like it was right for me to do that. So I just really respect Eli Herring and his decision. And as we know, the story goes, he ended up becoming a math teacher in high school. And I'm sure the financial burdens followed him where they wouldn't have, but he always looked back and said that he was proud of the decision that he'd made. So very cool.
Yeah. Wow. I love that story. And he has been an inspiration, for many years since that, incredible decision he had to make. So Noel, help us understand, you know, you talk about the skeleton, that, yeah, as a lay watcher, like it does look like you're on a cookie sheet and that we just assume anybody who does that must be crazy. Like, cause it just seems so remarkable. And we don't appreciate, you know, the technique that goes into it. Cause it looks like you're just holding on. Yeah. But help us understand the morals and ethics of that. And you sort of gave one example there, but I'm just curious, like what sort of decisions, even the little ones you have to make as you're training or competing in that event.
Yeah, there are a lot of moral and ethical decisions. So it gets kind of, it tests you. So the sport of skeleton, and at the Olympic level, you get tested morally and ethically daily, really, because you're trying to push yourself to be your absolute best, but at what cost? And a lot of times in the rule book, there are those gray areas where people try to find, like, okay, it says this, and it says you can do this, but you can't do, you know, you can do XYZ, but you can't do ABC. But where's this LMNOP section? So can we get away with it and not get caught? So one of the things is we're not allowed to put anything on our blades, the bottom of our sled. They're called runners, actually, but we're not allowed to put any waxes. Like skiing, you can put wax on your skis to make yourself go faster. But in my sport, that's illegal. We can't put on wax. We can't heat treat. So if you imagine metal and you put it at a certain temperature of heat, it'll open up those pores at a microscopic level, and you can actually pour in different chemicals and things to make it so that it hardens your steel. It hardens the steel, and that's illegal to do, but they don't have the best of ways to test for that. So it really does come down to, a lot of times, the athlete's own integrity. And so there were many times when I remember as a rookie, when I was first starting out in this sport, my mind was constantly fixated on what other people were doing. Like, I was constantly worried about this cheating aspect of the sport, of not having a means to regulate or mandate these rules that were in place, and constantly just thinking, people are doing it, people are cheating, people are heat treating their steel, their runners, and they're waxing it, but there's not a way to catch them. But they're saying that I can't do it, but then they don't have a way to say, yes, you're doing it. So where is this line? What do I do? If I want to compete with the best, the only way I can compete, I would have these thoughts in my head all the time as a rookie. The only way I can be my best is if I can keep up with their equipment, if I can keep up and do whatever the best are doing. But even though you know that what they're doing isn't ethical or legal in our sport. And I remember having this discussion with my husband. This was, like I said, back years in my rookie years, just saying, there's no way. How do you compete against the best when you know that these things are going on? And we decided from the very beginning that my integrity was worth more than any medal. It wouldn't matter if I took last, if I gave it my absolute best and took last, but I did it honestly. That was far more, you know, worth more than its weight in gold, and quite literally, right? But it wasn't easy, because the mental toll it takes on you of just constantly comparing yourselves to others and wondering if other people are cheating or not. So finally, that was really one of those big flips of the switch that switched me from being a rookie athlete to being an elite athlete, was to stop worrying about what other people were doing. Stop assuming or judging or, imagining that they were cheating, whether they were or weren't, and just start completely focusing on what I could control. Completely focus on my own game, and by small and simple things are great things brought to pass. That's one of my favorite scriptures and favorite quotes, is just to find the 1% factor in my own training that could be just a little bit better tomorrow than it was today, and focus on myself. What can I do 1% better tomorrow that I'm not doing today? And you know what? I know I can make up the margins of whatever might be taking place illegally or unethically on the side, outside of sport. And some of those athletes, I'm not saying that everybody was or is, you know, doing those things, but you definitely knew that there were a handful of athletes that were pushing that line of ethics or crossing it many times. And so once I started focusing on my own self, I didn't even see or didn't even worry about what others were doing, because all I knew is all I could do is control what I was doing and what I was thinking, and give myself that chance to be 1% better tomorrow than I am today.
An incredible example. Talk to us about your new life stacking program, what that involves.
Awesome. Yeah, I am so excited. So, you know, this pandemic has really stretched us all to its limits and had an impact on each of us. But for us, it's been really eye-opening to see where we can take our skills and talents. I've done keynote speaking for the past 7 years. Well, I've done it for the past probably about 15 years, but really 7 years full time. And obviously with the pandemic, it has completely shut down that line of work. And so I was thinking, well, you know, I like getting up on a stage and walking off, but I really want to see the impact that I can help people with. I want to help people live their life on purpose. I want to help them live their life by design and help strengthen their mindset and form healthy habits and be disciplined and take these principles of an Olympic perspective and give this to individuals to use in their life. So with that, I created this 12-week life stacking course. And what it is it's meant to help individuals live a life on purpose. And that's through mindset, purpose, recognizing your relationships and those around you, focusing on your values, working on discipline tricks, and so that you can habit stack. I've taken a lot of research, many hours in researching. I love researching. If I could go to school for like years and years, I would do it. I actually am one of those weird people that likes school and likes researching and learning and reading books and things like that. But it's fun. I really do enjoy it. So it's been really fun to take these 12 principles and compact them together into a 12-week course for individuals to live a life on purpose. So I'm excited to get going with it and to see how it transforms people's lives and helps improve them to succeed in any area of their life that they're hoping to succeed in.
I hope that many take advantage of that. Is there a certain spot you would send them to gain more information?
Yeah, thanks, Kurt. It's my website, noellepikuspace.com. So kind of simple, but my name is kind of tricky though, because a lot of people say Picus Pace, you know, so it's noellepikuspace.com.
Hey, Noelle, I have one last question for you. And by the way, one of my favorite things is when you did jump into your family's arms at the Olympics, you were wearing your young women medallion. I have four daughters, and I'm so grateful for good examples for them. One of the things I've been struck by with you is, as I've learned more about your story, is the trials that you've had. Can you talk about, everybody's going through trials, but can you talk about trials? And obviously we're going through a really difficult year right now. What are some words of inspiration for those, for everybody who's going through a trial right now?
Wow. Yeah. Trials. If somebody in this world has not been faced by trials this year, I would love to shake their hands, because I don't know how that would be possible. But the trials, whether it was missing out on the 2006 Olympic Games, I was ranked first in the world and got hit by a bobsled and broke my leg, compound fracture. I was out of competition for a while, or suffering multiple late miscarriages, or I could share a handful of different, you know, sob stories or tragedies or failures, as you might think in life. But I think the one thing, if I were to share just one tip or trick on becoming a little more resilient or seeing the light, if you will, past those struggles, it would be keeping an open mind and seeking for gratitude. Look for gratitude. Look for ways to appreciate the things that you do have, the things around you. Ask yourself each night the question, how have I seen God's hand in my life today? That to me, we say that, we talk about that at our dinner table. We go around the dinner table, our kids, even as five-year-olds, your kids are never too young or too old to play along in this little game of gratitude, but we'll go around the dinner table and everybody will say something that they're grateful for. And we can never say the same thing twice. And the kids actually, they really look forward to it. And it helps us all to see, it just lifts our spirits and it helps us to see the goodness in our life past. Yes, life can be kind of crappy right now. Like here's an example. Like I have this ongoing journal that I really, it's on my phone, but it's this ongoing like journal entry in my phone for 2020. And it's just like all the things that have gone wrong. And like, it's like, oh, you know, for example, my nephew left on a church mission, in Arizona. And he's like, I need someone to watch my turtle while I'm gone. And we're like, yeah, we'll take him. He's like, he'll be great with the fish. It'll be fine. And this was like, you know, seven trials into 2020. And all of a sudden we get this turtle and he's like, he'll be great with your fish. And all of a sudden we wake up in the morning and he ate all 15 of our fish. So that was just like one other thing. And then I'm like, okay, what else can go wrong? And I'm like, oh shoot, my tooth is kind of hurting. I think I might have a cavity. And they're like, oh, you actually need like a $4,000 implant. And you're like, oh my gosh, what else can go wrong? And then all of a sudden my husband starts like eating meeting a few weeks back and he's like, I can't taste this and I don't like tomatoes and I can't taste the tomato. And also he's like, oh my gosh, we all tested positive for COVID. Like, oh. It's just like, what else, you know? And through it all, I just really think just one, laughing, like you've got to have a sense of humor through trials. Number one, you've got to have a sense of humor. But number two, always just show gratitude and look for the light, look for the things that you're grateful for, whether it's the blue sky or the clouds that bring shade, that bring beauty and bring light and color around us, or warmth or a jacket or a carpet. It doesn't even matter. Just look for the things that you're grateful for, and it can lift anybody's spirits.
You know, we had Kirby Hayborn, an actor, LDS actor, on a couple of weeks ago. And that was exactly what he said, was showing gratitude. And then, of course, the next week, President Nelson comes out with an incredible message on giving thanks. And now you saying the same thing in the mouth of two or three witnesses, right? So thank you so much, Noelle. We sure appreciate you. We appreciate the person that you are. And thank you for being with us today.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Kurt. I sure appreciate it. This has been great.
And thank you to all of our listeners. We'll be back again next week with another episode of Voices of Light. Have a great day.